I'm Denise.
She's a non-fiction editor. And I'm Louise.
She's a fiction editor. And together,
we're the Editing Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Editing Podcast. So today we're going to talk about something that might not sound all that glamorous, but it is absolutely essential for every editor and proofreader.
Yes, we're talking about file management and version control. Definitely not the sexiest topic, but oh so important if you've ever stared at your screen thinking, wait, which version did I send the client? And we've all been there, haven't we? Files called final, 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 and really final, this one, dot, dot.
Or my personal favourite, client edit, final file two, really final, fixed.
I know, these are the classics, aren't they? We've all done it.
Yeah.
So today we're going to help you tidy up your digital desk because good file management saves time, reduces stress, and keeps clients confident in your professionalism.
And then when we talk through some sort of nuts and bolts, we're going to share some of our own personal insights on this issue.
Yeah.
So let's start with why this matters so much for freelancers.
So when you're juggling multiple clients, multiple projects, multiple versions, you need a clear system. Otherwise, it just descends into pure chaos.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just annoying. It can lead to mistakes, sending the wrong file, overwriting edits, losing important feedback. I mean,
I know, it's horrible. And it can just look really unprofessional too. Mm. But on the flip side, clients do notice when you're organised and it gives them confidence in your process.
Yeah, and actually what that means is that your file structure is part of your brand, really.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have said that word. I know some listeners don't
gotta
like
get
it.
In. You, don't it's you dare start slipping marketing and branding into a technical episode, Harmby.
So, okay, in that case, let's talk about folder structure, how people might keep things tidy. So if you're listening and you're completely new to this, start by creating a main folder for your business, something like editing projects or editing clients. I know it sounds really basic, but it's sensible.
Absolutely. And then inside that, you can then have one folder per client. Then within each client folder, create subfolders for each separate project.
Exactly. So for example, you might have something like editing projects, within which is John Smith, within which is Novel July 2025.
Yeah. And then inside that project folder, you'll have further subfolders like original files, edited files, correspondence, and invoices. And that way, you're keeping everything related in one place. So there's no hunting through downloads or email attachments at midnight. Not that I've ever
done
that.
Not really time of the day for that matter. And here's another pro tip. Be consistent with your naming. It doesn't matter so much whether you use underscores or dashes or what your date formats are. Just choose what works for you, but then stick to it. So everything looks consistent.
Yeah. And not only does that look tidy, but it's just that it's just much easier to sort and find things when you need to go in the hunt for something.
Yeah, definitely. So should we dig into file naming a bit more? Because that's where I find the most chaos starts.
I agree. So the goal is to make it obvious what the file is, who it belongs to, and what stage it's at.
Yeah. So one, include the client or project name. Two, include the version or stage, for example, version 2 or initial edit or proofed. And then three, include the date. Oh, and then four, include your name or initials.
Yeah, so you might end up with something like 07-10-25, the date, - Mackenzie, the name, - article, - proofed, - LH, .docx.
Perfect.
Yeah.
No guessing.
Yeah.
No panic searches through six versions. And including your initials means it's clear whose version it is, which, you know, may be less relevant for some editors. It depends on who you're working with. But
yeah, but it's especially important if you're collaborating with another editor or, you know, other team members.
Yeah, that totally means you avoid overwriting each other's work, doesn't it? Especially if you're using cloud storage.
Absolutely. It's so easy to do that. And it also depends on your workflow as well. If people are sending multiple copies of things around, it's so easy to get confused. And
I'm already just thinking about the kind of projects you work on and getting the jitters.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
We can talk more about that.
We can. Yeah. So let's talk about version control, because that part can get really a bit messy if you're not careful.
Yeah. And I think a key rule has to be never delete old versions Too soon. I mean, just till you're sure.
Yeah. And even then, again, we'll talk about this in a bit, but, you know, do we need to? Anyway, but the thing is, you want to be able to go back if something goes wrong. So, for example, if a client changes their mind or you need to compare edits or, you know, you send them by WeTransfer and they don't download it in time. So you have to resend it, you know?
Yeah, and you've already deleted it.
Yeah.
So as a rule of thumb, keep at least three versions. The original file you received, the work in progress version, and the final version you delivered. All labelled clearly using the tips we talked about a moment ago.
Yeah, yeah. So now on to backups, because losing work is the nightmare scenario. Bring you to tears. We've all done it and it brings you to tears.
So rule number one, never keep your only copy on your computer, like locally, I mean.
So some people argue for the 3-2-1 rule, which is three copies on two different media and one of them should be off-site.
Yeah, so you that could mean your computer, then an external hard drive and a cloud service like Dropbox, Google Drive or OneDrive or something.
Yeah, and automation is your friend here. So you want those backups to happen automatically so you can just set and forget.
God, you really do. Mm. Because no one, but no one remembers to back up. Well, some people will. That's a lie. But a lot of people don't remember to back up manually every day. And what are the chances that even if you're really diligent, you forget on the very day that your laptop decides to die?
Yes, I've got a horror story about that that we might tell you later. But yes, that's Sod's law, and that will happen. It could happen. It should be a joke, but, you know, it has happened to people, and it's just awful.
Awful. Okay, so on cloud storage, because let's talk about that, because that's where version control and collaboration often meet, isn't it?
Yeah, so services like Dropbox, OneDrive, and Google Drive all keep version histories, which is just brilliant.
God, yeah. Imagine you accidentally overwrite a file. If you can roll it back to an earlier version, say 30 days, I mean...
It's such a lifesaver.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something else that I did the other day, but I'll save that for a bit.
You're going to be chatting for ages. I'm just going to get a cup of tea while you're nattering at the end.
Just remind me about overwriting. So, yeah, cloud storage is a lifesaver. It really is. It saved my skin more than once. But it's also great for collaboration. When, you know, you get multiple people working on a project or a document, you just need to make sure that everybody that's involved knows the system and sticks to it.
Yeah. And I guess, again, I'm talking sort of a bit tangentially here because I don't collaborate with people apart from my author. Mm. But I would imagine you've got to agree on who edits what and when, because you don't want simultaneous editing unless you're doing something designed for it, like Google Docs, or maybe if you're working in, I don't know, I'm thinking even Office 365, you don't want necessarily people...
Well, you know what happens...
Doing things at the same time.
Yeah, because you end up with conflicted versions, don't you? And you see this in Dropbox. We've seen it, you know, when we worked together in the CIP Council, and we used Dropbox for that, and... It's easy to be both more than one person working on it.
Yeah, and you've got five versions, all with some really good new stuff in it.
Yeah, and then you've got to untangle it all. And nobody knows what the final brackets two version is anymore.
Yeah, what's actually final anymore?
So, shall we talk about archiving old work? Because we do all tend to hang on to things far too long. What does far too long even mean?
We're not just talking about hitting the delete button here, but rather making sure that the finished projects are moved into archive folders, at least for a time. I mean, you know, maybe you don't need to be holding on to something for 20 years, but I can talk about this when we come to chat, but you know, that sort of like these things do happen when, you know, an author gets in touch 5 years later or whatever. But anyway, we'll come on to that.
Absolutely. But I think the important thing is that you have the data, but it's not necessarily cluttering up your workspace.
Yeah.
And also, that reminds me, if you handle client files with sensitive material, make sure your archive is secure and password protected or encrypted if needed. And I've got another story about that as well. You need to be sure how your client wants you to handle that material as well when you're finished the project.
Data protection really matters for all our work, but perhaps especially if you're working with publishers, corporate clients or academic material where there may be sort of, I don't know, NDAs or other sensitivities involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how about going over some of the tools that can help us editors with file management and version control?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots. And for many of us, something simple and easy to use like Dropbox or Google Drive is, we find it's perfectly good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I use. If you want local backups, tools like Syncback Free or Time Machine for Macs or Acronis work well.
And for those who love structure, a project management app like Trello or Notion can help you track files and deadlines.
Especially if you're managing multiple clients at once, yeah. You can keep an eye on what's going on where.
And if you're super techie, you can explore version control tools like Git. Is that how you pronounce it?
I've got no idea. I don't know. Is that a thing? I'm sure my ignorance
it's
here.
A thing. I found out about it when I was researching, you know, preparing to talk about this, but I didn't. It was one of those, it's a bit like quantum physics, you know. I do a sort of lot of reading and I kind of understand some of the word. No, I can say some of the words, but I don't actually know what they mean. But what was coming across, that's probably overkill for most editors.
I would think so. Yeah, maybe. And maybe if you have to edit something like code manuals or something, which I know some of our colleagues do, obviously.
Yeah.
So it is worth being aware of, but I guess that's probably area specific, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So let's wrap up with just a quick summary before we start chinwagging about how we each handle things with some key takeaways for keeping your files under control.
Okie dokie. Right. Okay. So number one, create a clear, consistent folder structure and stick to it.
Yeah. Number two, use logical, descriptive file names with dates.
And number three, always keep your original file safe.
And four would be backup automatically, cloud or external drive.
And number five, archive old projects to stay clutter-free.
Perfect. Follow those five steps and your future self will thank you next time a client asks for a file from 6 months ago or maybe even 6 years ago. More of that years later.
So to sum up, file management isn't just admin, it's part of being a professional editor.
Yeah, it really is. Tidy system means fewer mistakes, faster turnarounds, and just a calmer work experience.
Yeah, you're protecting your work, but also your reputation and, importantly, your emotional well-being.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better. So, let's get personal. Let's talk about how we approach file management and version control, how we might do it better, and some of our stories that have led us to down this road.
Yeah.
How about we start with, like, let's just both say how we manage our folder structures. Why don't I start?
Yeah.
Because I work with one type of client.
Mm-hmm.
Fiction, independent fiction, well, crime fiction and thriller editors. And for me, there's no working with different clients who have different needs on the whole.
Yeah.
I use a fairly simple management system, exactly like the one we described, where each client has their own folder. If I've worked on multiple books for them over the years, there's a subfolder for each book, and then within that, all those different folders we talked about, like, you know, the archive files, the original files, the what's in progress and admin and invoicing stuff, all separate. But I do very much like that idea of keeping it all within one place.
Yeah. I basically do the same thing. So this folder structure that we talked about is essentially what I like to do, and I like to have them in the same order for each client as well, so that I number my folders as well. So I don't know if you do that, but I like to have them not in alphabetical order. I like to have them in the order that I work on them. So my folder 00 is all my reference files and original files, and then 01 is the work in progress, 02 is the final files.
Do you mean like your client folders are numbered, or you mean internally?
So my client folders are just, you know, in my year, that year. So I've got clients 2026. I've got in my archive, I've got clients 25, clients 24, going back the way, right?
Right.
So I just have my active clients for this year. And then within that, and they're all just in alphabetical order, And then, but when once you get into that, and I look at a specific client, then they're all...
Then that you get your numbering.
Yeah. And
then that's interesting though, because I don't do it. I don't divide mine up by year. I can see why you might want to do that. Mm-hmm. But my top line folders are by client surname.
Right.
Because I need to be able to, if one of them gets back in touch, I need to be able to find that. And I don't want to be having to remember if I worked with them 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that happens. You know, it's like they haven't been in, I don't know when they were last in touch, but I do know what their surname is. So.
Right. Whereas I'm probably working with most of my clients every year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just...
That's a good example, though, where, you know, you set up your files... management structure according to your particular needs. We're not, you know, we just in case anybody was thinking we were saying you've got to do it one particular way, you don't. You know.
And you know, it took me quite a long time to find
a system
that worked for me that I found helpful and made it easier for me. And it was a bit of trial and error involved as well in just how I named the folders within them and that sort of thing. But numbering them really works for me, and then, you know, within those files I number again, so I'm always working in the same kind of format, you know. Which just makes
I quite like the idea of adding some numbering within my subfolders. I might have a look at that.
And
interestingly, I've noticed that when you mentioned the fact that, you know, there's been a time when we've both been on the CIEP council together. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're working with multiple people and staff members as well. And I've noticed that when... I don't know if this is a thing, but the fiction editors tend to be the ones who don't bend towards the numbering, whereas our project management colleague,
his
colleague is a specialist project manager.
Yeah,
she always puts numbers by things, and that makes me think.
Yeah,
if she's doing it, there's something to that.
Absolutely, because I could also have folders with like different assets in there, you know, like different types of things. So it just helps keep track of everything, and following that sort of structure, it just gives me a bit of, you know.
Also, if your assets files are always numbered 5, roughly, it means that it's actually much when you're searching through lots of content, say a big list of content. It's much easier to sort of zoom in on a folder name that's got a number attached to it than something that's got a word attached to it. So I can see that.
Yes, because when I open up a client's folder, all the folders in it are in the same order, no matter what the client is. You know,
I'm going to have a look at that. You've got me all sort of like, you know, nerdy about that now.
Yes, that's something to think about. You know, I think it's a good point that, like you say, there's not a single way to do that. The other thing I would say with the sort of clients that I work with is that I generally have no control over what the files are called. They come to me, they come to me named already, and all they want me to do is add my initials at the end and sometimes the date. And sometimes it absolutely makes my skin crawl, the chaos that there is there.
Not
everyone, and a lot of big publishers obviously have very clear file management structures, and they're all named in a particular way, but some of them are easier than others. It is not helpful for me to have a file number that starts with an ISBN, which you think how long an ISBN is before you get to even anything else in that file. It's soul destroying. So there's you know, there's no one right or wrong way to organize your file management, but some are definitely better than others.
Yeah.
And if you're able to impose that, and I suppose with indie authors, maybe you've got a bit more freedom to rename files when you get them.
Oh, I've got absolute freedom. Yeah.
So you can do what you like.
I would even rename the original one that an author keeps, so that I've got that absolute starting copy to deal with, and I will just call that, you know, unless the author happens to have named it in the way that I want it named, I will rename it as, like, you know, according to my structure that fits in, and then it will go in its appropriate folder so that it's safe and, you know.
I suppose then that actually That's another thing that I suppose we have to mention, is that depending on who your client is, there might be a little bit of education involved here in having a discussion with your client about file management and version control. Because if you're working with a new author, they may not have considered that. And
well, they do. Some of my clients have got in a state before because uh-huh. Because they've come back and they said, oh, because they haven't got things organised at their end, and so they've said, oh, I don't know which version I'm looking at. I'm looking at something from me here, and I can tell them exactly. You know, I can say, look out, have you got one that's this file name? Mm-hmm. And if not, if you can't find it, don't worry, I'll send it to you again.
Yeah.
So I at least always know the latest one. But I mean, I was going to mention this earlier and mm-hmm. restrained myself, but you know, I have had clients come back several years after because they've decided to do something. I don't know, maybe they put the book on hold or something mm-hmm. like that. Like they didn't go further in the self-publishing process, for example. Something came up in their lives and they got my edit back. Maybe they did their revisions or they didn't get round to even doing that. They just kind of put the project on hold. And then 3 years later, they're saying, oh, you haven't got that still, have you? and I think I've had one even older than that. Mm. And unfortunately, I was able to go back and say, well, this is what I've got. I don't know if you made any changes to it, but we have got something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just thinking about that issue of how long you keep stuff for, again, I think it really depends on kind of who you're working with and whether if you're working for a publisher or a packager, they'll have their own system where they've got their own backups.
Well,
but
you
if you're
say
working
that.
With indie authors, they might, well,
huh? You say
oh,
that.
Well, okay, that you can tell us about that. But
I think
that somebody might well not have that. And
yeah,
they might think that they've lost their novel.
Yeah.
And,
do you delete anything?
I would only delete things if there was a client. In the very rare circumstances where there is a client that I've made a decision that I will never work with again.
Yeah.
I would hold on to their files for, say, about 3 years
right.
or something. But
yeah.
after that, I will delete it. But uh-huh. most of my, I've got files. I mean, obviously, I haven't been editing fiction for the past 20 years. So all the work that I did with publishers, mm-hmm. I don't keep any of that anymore.
Yeah.
It's not me being in a big strop about it. I just don't work for publishers anymore. So I haven't got any of those. I have deleted those files. But any one of my indie authors that I've worked for in the past probably 10 years.
Uh-huh.
You know, some of them have only got one or two books in them, but I will keep that stuff.
Yeah.
So just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case.
I think I keep everything. But yeah, keep pretty much, even though I work with publishers. And one of the things that I just alluded to there was I was contacted by a publisher a few years ago now that I had worked for, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years before that. Mm. And they were doing a new edition of this textbook, and some of their files were missing. Not all of them, not the whole book.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
some
yeah.
of the because
Denise to the rescue.
Yeah, well, I had them, you know, because I had just archived them. But because with the publishers, they tend to have separate files for each unit in a student book. For whatever reason, some of them had disappeared or they'd got corrupted. I don't know, and I don't know why they would have only have had one version of it, but anyway, for whatever reason, they asked me, is there any chance you still have any copies of these particular units? And I did. So I was able to send them back to them. I felt very, very pleased with myself about that.
I bet you did. I bet you were walking with a
I know.
Strut.
I felt like saying to them, so how much is this worth?
for
my time, you know, but I didn't, of course. But, you know, it just goes to show you that you just don't know.
Yeah.
But the converse of that was I did work for a client who, so it was the Scottish Prison Service, and I worked on a building user guide for a prison.
As you do.
As you do. And that was under very strict conditions, obviously, working on how a prison works, the user guide to it.
Where the escape tunnels are.
Pretty much, you know, security systems and all that sort of stuff. So I had to work on that in under very particular conditions, and then nothing was allowed to remain on my computer at all. So, yeah, you know, I had to sign NDAs and all sorts of other things. Uh-huh. We're talking a good number of years ago, and that I wouldn't hold on to anything from that. And so, you know, quite a lot of our colleagues will work with sensitive documents, and that will absolutely affect how or even if they're allowed to back up or keep versions of these files.
That's a really good point, Denise, because actually, let's say you're allowed to, I'm just thinking about AI now, like if you're working on documents that you've signed an NDA with, given that we know that things like Copilot can send nothing really what that a human would think of as particularly useful, but you know, sometimes these systems on our computers do transmit data of sorts, so it's really important, I suppose, to clarify in terms of storage. You know, there may be some clients who don't want any risk of even that happening.
Yeah.
But in that case, it might be a situation where they have to say, we will provide you with the hardware.
Absolutely. And that does happen. I wouldn't have been surprised if they'd done that for me at that point. And they may even have changed, and maybe that's how they would approach it now. But
yeah,
I can imagine if you're working on, you know, government stuff or, you know, commercially sensitive stuff for organisations, then they don't want to take these sort of risks, and you may have to work on... You know, provided hardware for that particular job.
Hmm. So what backup systems do you use generally?
Generally, Dropbox. I have Dropbox. Yeah. I don't use OneDrive. Yeah. I use Dropbox for all my client work and most of my teaching work as well. But I do have all my teaching stuff on Google Drive as well, mainly because students access the resources and things and the videos and stuff through Google Drive. This is for live teaching, not my teachable stuff. So I use Google Drive for that because students
are accessing
it. But
teachable is acting still as a form of backup. I'll talk about that in a minute.
Absolutely. So Google Drive and Dropbox. And do you know, I did back up to a hard drive, external hard drive, for a while. But see, when you were talking about, you know, automating things and having systems.
Yeah.
I kept forgetting to do it.
Yeah.
So I tend not to do
I'm
that.
I'm exactly the same. I mean, I haven't even gone down that route for quite a few years now.
Me too.
I possibly need to look at, you know, I'm not doing 3-2-1. Mm-hmm. I'm probably doing 2-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, it's, I mean, the stuff's on my local computer, but it's backing up to Dropbox.
Likewise,
it's that Dropbox part of the Dropbox app that's sitting within my local device that it immediately automatically goes into the cloud. I've got a few bits and bobs in Google Drive, but nothing, not my client work.
Mm-hmm.
And
you've got Teachable, you mentioned.
And I've got Teachable, so that's got course material. That's always got the latest version of course materials.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, that's good, but I suppose it doesn't have all the sort of, like, you know, if there's a PDF on there, that's what will be on Teachable. The Word version of that I could edit and create a revised PDF from is in Dropbox. So so it's a sort of, I would call it a semi backup for certain types of materials.
Do you find it with your thinking of that sort of stuff, like your teaching or maybe your marketing stuff, not client stuff, but do you find that you've got multiple copies of things in different places, or are you quite disciplined about that?
Well, I've got better at it. I've started sort of keeping things, you know, got folders for booklets or folders for each, something like a course would have its own folder and subfolders, but even things like blog content is in one folder, podcast content's in another folder, and then you know, booklets, things like that, they're in another one. And really, that came about because I was having exactly that problem. I mean, I remember, like, I can still remember a time, and I'm all quite embarrassed to say it, but, you know, basically I used to look in my Dropbox folder and it was just like, it's just all there.
Everything,
you know,
it was just there. Like,
there was no, it just used to make me feel unpleasant.
I know.
What about your marketing stuff?
So my marketing stuff, I do have a folder with marketing and then it's got stuff in it. But I've got like, there's kind of stuff that it sits in multiple places. So do you know what I mean? So there's marketing, but then there's website and branding. And then I've got some of that stuff is also used, but some of my booklets and things is part of my course materials, so it's sitting in that folder as well.
And you know what, that gets tricky when you start to think about like what's the latest version,
exactly,
you know, where is it. So it is when you're dealing with something that you've repurposed in multiple ways, that does, I think that is messier for me than it should be, but I'm not so precious about it.
I think I'm aware of it, and I think I really should do something about that, but I'm not quite sure what it is yet. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it'd be nice just to have one copy of everything, but then it's labelling that and accessing it in a way that feels logical for the different
Definitely.
Systems that it's involved in. And I don't know if there's an answer to that, to be honest. It might just have to be more than one version. In more than one place, but trying just to remember where they are, which is it's not ideal.
So thinking about client work then, you know, when you were saying that you keep all your, you keep stuff, you keep it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I do in a sense now, apart from the client base that I'm not going to work with them again.
Yeah.
So, but for, you know, I just keep them for ages and ages. So when you say I keep everything, do you keep all the versions as well? So let's say you've got an original version, then do you hang on to sort of, if you've got version 1, 2, 3 and before your final, would you keep all of it?
Yeah, I do. So like if I'm editing something and it goes back for the author queries, and then that comes back to me and that's another version because they've marked it up, and then I do another version to finalize everything, I keep all of that.
Just in case
there's any questions.
Say Dropbox breaks.
Yeah.
And you can't do your restore back, you know, you can't get yesterday's version or something. I mean, for me, that's because of the kind of way I'm working. I don't get versions back and forth between me and clients. They send me a version, I edit it. I might make separate versions, particularly if I'm thinking, I don't know, let's say my computer crashes halfway through and I think, I don't know, or there's lightning outside or something. And I would keep any new versions that I made. But I think my head's in the same space as yours.
Yeah. I also think I just like to keep it for self-preservation as well, in case there was anything that came up that was a question mark over what I'd done.
Yeah.
To be able to have all the versions available to me that I had worked on and that other people had input to as well.
Yeah.
And to show perhaps what the final version that I worked on was, it's out of my hands after that. So any subsequent changes weren't my responsibility, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I just think you know, I've got space. Why not just, you know, it's not like an issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 Have you ever had to deal with any problems that influenced how you do your file version control or anything? You sort of alluded to some horror stories when we were
just
sort of going through the nuts and boltsy stuff.
Last week I was copying over files from my local file directory onto a client's SharePoint or something like that, or Google Drive, can't remember. Copying them over, and it was about 6 files I'd highlighted and was moving over. And as I did it, do not ask me how it did this. It overwrote all the file names to the same file name.
Oh, no.
Yes. So, and I was like, what the hell just happened there? I still don't know how I did it. I must have clicked something. But on my computer, and in the platform that I just uploaded to them, the 6 files all had the same name, which was the name of one of those files. So I had basically copied it over. Now, fortunately, when I opened them up, all the content was still the original content.
Yeah.
So I was able to go back to Dropbox and just restore an earlier version of it.
Yeah.
And thank goodness it just all went back just like magic. But oh, my heart was in my mouth because I thought, I didn't know whether I'd overwritten all of those files with content of the files as well. Luckily, it was just the name. But oh, my goodness.
See, this is why, you know, that idea of having backups in different places. Mm. Like, so if you're using something like Office 365 and you've got SharePoint and it does something weird, that you've got your safety net in Dropbox.
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than kind of relying on a system that just, like, you know.
I know. It could have been so easily just all lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would just
be. Well done, you.
I'm trying to think,
I've never experienced anything like that. I mean, I have had.
You must have done over the years. Have you ever just lost a file and not been able to find it?
Yeah, I have had a... I tell you what I've done. I've started working on something that I opened up from an email. And you know how it sits in that weird place?
Yeah.
Like in I forget where it is, but it's like a sort of temporary folder.
Is it like roaming data or something weird like that?
Yeah. And I didn't know sort of to look there. And I remember thinking... And it wasn't that I could just open it again. You know, like sometimes when you go into Word, you can just open something up straight away. You can pick from a list.
Yeah.
And if it happens to be there in that, you know, roaming data or whatever, that's fine. You'll still be able to open it. But I'd been and done some other things and I didn't know what to... I didn't know where it was.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've lost it. I have... It's just disappeared out of the ether. But of course, I hadn't lost it because I had... I have my backup.
Yeah. And that's when you thank the backup gods that your stuff is still there.
And the other thing I have done is I've accidentally, I think there was a time when I'd set up Word to automatically save things. And rather than just doing Control S, which is just like a sort of almost a tick, I just do it without even thinking now. So, you know, I just do a keyboard shortcut to save my work. And I did something bonkers, like I sort of selected the whole lot and pressed the delete button, something mad, and then it saved. And it was just like, it's okay, because that's fine, because I can go back to Dropbox and there's a version from 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And yes, I've lost 15 minutes worth of edits, but I haven't lost 5 weeks worth of edits. And that was just like, just one of those moments where you want to go and just like, bow to the technology gods.
So I'll tell you the other horror story, which is not mine, but I remember my jaw being on the floor when I read this. And it was an editor in one of the online editing groups was explaining how they'd had an automatic backup of their entire computer happened every night, say like at midnight or something like that.
Yeah.
To an external, whatever, I don't, was it called Carbonite or something like that? I don't know. Anyway.
That rings a bell.
Yeah.
I think that might be for Mac users.
It might well be, yeah. So each time it did that, it overwrote the previous version. So there was only ever one version in the Carbonite place, okay?
Oh.
One night it did that just after her computer had died or done something weird and had been wiped. And it backed up basically the empty file of the computer. There was nothing there.
Yeah.
So she'd lost everything on her computer, but there was nothing in the backup system either, which just makes your skin crawl. Yeah. And that was like years of client work and business information, everything, because she didn't have a backup anywhere else. So that's another reminder to, and that's where, you know.
That's where cloud storage really comes into its own, isn't it?
Yeah. But what a scary story that is. Imagine losing everything and having to start from scratch.
It's unthinkable. Yeah. I mean, it just makes me feel quite ill. So here's a question then. I think I know the answer, but tell me. I know we've both said about how the sort of things we might tweak to our systems, particularly with regards to different types of content we've got on them. But, you know, in terms of having a structured approach to this, how does that make you feel emotionally?
Oh, good question, Harmby. It makes me feel very calm, I have to say, that I know where my files are. I know how they're ordered in a way that works for me.
Yeah.
So whenever I get a new piece of work in, the first thing I do is get it onto my own system in a folder so that I know I have the original files there. And that makes me feel in control, definitely.
Yeah.
And just having that system and just doing things like that, these automatic processes that I go through when a new job comes in and I'm certain, it makes me feel professional. You know, it reinforces that feeling of I'm doing a good professional job here. I'm taking it seriously and I'm behaving in a way that's as efficient as it can possibly be for me and for my client. So, how about you?
Oh, I don't really know if I've got anything to add to that. I mean, I think you're pretty much the same, but I love a framework. I love a system. Yeah. I love a structure. It's not always the most complex of things. In fact, the more simple I can make things, the better, because the more efficient I can be. I mean, simple for me, you know, simple in a way that's workable. But it very much makes me feel in control. So that's the starting point. I think it has to be. It makes me feel in control. And when I feel in control of a situation, even if it's a difficult job, or then as long as if it's got structure to it and a plan, it's a bit like the way you and I often talk about sort of like business reviews and business development and strategic planning and that kind of stuff. It's the idea of having a process. Yeah. So that you do this, this, and this, and you can't. It's something that not everything to do with our work or our personal lives. It's not. There isn't always stuff that we can control.
Mm.
But what we can control is the processes we go through and the systems we use and the structures we set up, and that is an emotional thing that makes me feel really calm and happy relaxed, even though the work that I may be doing may be very intense and demanding on me mentally. At least I know where each bit of it is and which stage I'm in. And so it's a very positive thing. And when I can't, and the odd occasion where I think I haven't got something where it needs to be, because I've made a mistake, because we are all human, then, you know, it does give me the jitters. And so...
Yeah.
But I like also something you just mentioned. Sorry,
Anne. It's okay.
Just to butt in, you talked about sort of like that doing things the same way over again. And that really resonated with me, because I do think you build up a kind of muscle memory. When you get to the habit of doing this stuff, it becomes muscle memory. So you were talking about how, you know, because your internal files or folders are always ordered and numbered in so that the same things are in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
It means that even if your gains are just marginal, they all add up.
It does. It does. And I think that's, if you're a newer editor listening to this, I think this is definitely a way of making yourself, you know, feel professional and act in a professional way and giving you confidence in your processes. I went through a lot of trial and error and just randomly, you know, keeping things in folders before I started to think about how I structured this. And I wish I'd done it earlier. It was for me, it was self-taught. It wasn't something that anybody said to me, have a think about how you do this, because it's going to make your life much easier. And it's like you say, it's these marginal gains in running our businesses where these small improvements can have disproportionately bigger effects on us, actually. Yeah. Because
small but mighty.
Yeah, they make us feel in control. They make us feel calm. And that has to be a good thing, surely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's rather a lovely way to end up.
I think so. We shall finish there, shall we? So that's it from us this week. We really hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening to us again. If you'd like to help support the Editing Podcast, you can join our Patreon community, or you can bung us a wee tip.
We'd love to have you on board, and all our patrons get exclusive access to a huge batch of transcripts. We'll pop a link in the show notes for you. So, she's been Denise.
And she's been Louise. Join us again soon. Bye.